Senator Javits and Mr. D'Amato, is assuming that the hostages are released this week or very soon. You both have agreed, as I understand it, that it would be right and proper to trade spare parts for their release. Would you go beyond that? Would you give them munitions? Would you give the Iranians something else beyond that, Senator Javits?
The spare parts issue, of course, is joined to the provisions that they've already called for, which is something about the return of their frozen assets and various other points that they've made. No apology, because that's out of the package. But I would adopt the policy for our country that we don't want to see Iran dismembered. That would be greatly against our interests by the Soviet Union and Iraq. And beyond the spare parts, which are due now, we'd have to feel our way. We don't know their situation. We don't know what capacity they have to resist Iraq. And hence, we're going to have to look it over. So all I would commit to now would be those spare parts which remain undelivered, which will help them, of course, to defend their country against the Iraqis. But I would go no further until we look the situation over again after the hostages are released.
Let me go on to Mr. D'Amato on that question.
I believe it'd be totally inappropriate, Tony, for us to begin to get into the details of what kind of parts or equipment would we make available. I do favor the quick release of the hostages, and in terms of keeping that prior contractual arrangement and agreement that would give to them that equipment which they have under order, I see no objection to seeing to it that that is taken care of. What we want to do is, I think, not attempt to open up a dialogue on this issue at this time when it is in such a obviously delicate and critical state.
Ms. Holtzman has arrived, and let me just ask you, have you been able to catch your breath?
Well, it's a good thing I've been practicing for this marathon because I have my own today.
All right. The question we put to the other two candidates, Ms. Holtzman, was that apparently all three of you have agreed that the exchange of spare parts for the hostages is a fair equation. Would you go beyond that? Would you give the Iranians anything else to get the release of the hostages?
Well, I think we have to be very careful in talking about that at this point, because I think the major objective ought to be the release of the hostages. I know how much their families have agonized. I myself went to college with one of the women who's being held there. I'd like to see them freed. I think we have to be very cautious, though, about plans in the future. Making common cause with Iran is something that I think is hard to accomplish and may not be desirable. We also have to consider the problems of a widening of the war. But I think the major objective ought to be getting the hostages out now.
Senator, you said that we'll have to feel our way after the spare parts stage of any exchange goes. Are you fearful of a Vietnam-like situation where we could be just gradually dragged into this conflict and into the Middle East?
We constantly have to be alert to that danger. I believe the danger is heavily countered by the existence of the War Powers Resolution, of which I'm the author, which prevents the president from following a Vietnam pattern, that is, by constantly feeding through deployment as commander-in-chief the requisite number of troops in, which gradually gets us more and more involved. So long as I'm in the Senate, if the people send me there, I think that'll represent the power that'll see that the War Powers Resolution is really carried out. And right now, that's the principal issue before the American people: peace or war, survival. So critical is the Persian Gulf issue. But I feel that we have to be constantly alert to that prospect. And I'd like to point out that together with others, Case of New Jersey, who was then in the Senate, and Hubert Humphrey, real revered memory, who was then in the Senate, we did not get the United States involved in Angola a few years ago, notwithstanding Dr. Kissinger's advice, precisely because, and I respect Kissinger enormously, he's a great friend of mine, matter of fact, endorsed me for the Senate, But we did not let the United States get involved precisely because we did not wish to get our foot in a man trap. That's a lot less of a danger now with the war powers resolution on the books, but it's still a danger, and I would be very vigilant about it.
Let me ask Ms. Holtzman about that. Are you satisfied that the war powers resolution, is that substantial a hurdle to a president, or unwittingly, I'm not saying deliberately, getting us involved in a war there? We have carriers, we have naval ships, we have aircraft in that area that could be fired upon. We could have hot pursuit, all this under the war powers resolution, as I understand it. Anyway, I want to see what you think.
Well, of course, the war powers resolution has loopholes, and any piece of legislation has loopholes. And ultimately, it's not the statutes that will protect the interests of the people of this country, but the courage of the people that we send into the House and Senate, who will have to speak out against policies that may be unpopular. It was possible, and ultimately Congress did end the Vietnam War by voting against the legislation that would have allowed it to continue and by putting riders on appropriations bills. But ultimately it takes the qualities of courage and willingness to speak out. I think that it's very important to have close consultation between a president and the Senate that allow for greater scrutiny of presidential action, and I hope for greater protection of the public interest. But with respect to Iran, there's some other measures that I think ought to be taken. One would have to do with protecting the interests of consumers here in this country. I've called on the president to try to take measures to protect against profiteering by oil companies as a result of the shortages that are developing in the Middle East as a result of the war, and I think those are measures that ought to be taken. I'm also very, very disturbed at the fact that France, despite the continuation of this war, is selling nuclear materials to Iraq. Those materials, which are ostensibly designed for a nuclear power plant, can be used to create a nuclear weapon, a nuclear bomb. I think that that creates an immense danger to the state of Israel. It creates an immense danger to world peace.
What should we do about France in that particular case?
Well, I think we have a lot of talking to do with France, not only about the nuclear material that it's selling to Iraq, but also with respect to the fact that we do not have a mechanism now to consult with our allies regularly on areas outside of NATO. And I think we need to do that because we didn't have a united front with respect to the Afghanistan invasion by the Soviet Union. We didn't have a united front on the issue of the hostages. We didn't have a united front on the Olympics game.
This is your Democratic president that you're talking about right now.
Well,
Democratic control
kind of. Well, it's been going on for a long time, and I think we need to have that kind of mechanism. We've been concentrating in the past on Europe and on NATO areas, and properly so. But there are events taking place in other parts of the world, and we have to develop a mechanism so that we can get a united front with our allies, and we haven't been doing that. They've been going their own way in areas that endangers, I think, world peace, is what France is doing in Iraq does.
Let's go to Mr. D'Amato on that same question. Do you feel that the War Powers Act would be sufficient deterrent for President, even unwillingly, to get us involved more in the man trap, as Senator Javits has referred to it?
It's a very careful line, Tony, that any president has to walk, particularly given the exigencies of the situation, the fact that we are and the free world is so dependent on oil at this point in time, the fact that the area is seething with dissension, with distrust, with different power vacuums which are so quickly being filled by various groups. So it's something that will call for a cool head, a very steady hand, to see to it that, yes, we protect our vital interest, but we don't plunge ourselves, this nation, and maybe even the world, into a conflagration unnecessarily. And so I think that it was so important for us to develop the kinds of capability in terms of rapid deployment, which we really are lacking in terms of being able to move men and materiel, so that in the event we must have a presence and demonstrate an ability so that indeed we can deter acts of aggression, that this nation has that capability. That's something that really both of my opponents, I believe, in terms of their record, in terms of recognizing what is necessary to bring about confidence in our allies. Let me share with you a thought, if I might.
Well, before you go on with sharing that thought, let me ask you about your remarks involving a cool head and a steady hand. You were quoted the other day in the Watertown Times as saying that you would have advised the president to bomb Iran, at least the port outside. The quote is, I first close your port, then give you 24 hours to let you know I'm going to bomb your port.
Is
that a cool head and a steady hand?
There were a number of options that I believe, without getting into specifics at this time, Tony, that 11 months ago, prior to and thereafter the seizure of the hostages that Mr. Carter had, in terms of diplomatic, in terms of economic, in terms of military, and of course we didn't have a rapid deployment force, that could have been utilized. And I think his response at that time, to be quite candid, was inadequate. However, it would serve no useful purpose given the exigencies of the situation now, given the fact that we literally are waiting momentarily for word on a minute-by-minute, hour-by-hour basis for the release of the hostages, to engage in any rhetoric which yet might be inflammatory. And so I would withhold any further delineation other than the fact that I believe that his handling of that matter was less than adequate.
But you believe bombing was a viable option 11 months ago?
No, absolutely not. I think that there were possible military courses of action that could have been employed, or the thought that these were the kinds of things that could be done. I think that, for example, our attempt at freeing the hostages was less than adequate. I was saddened by the results of it. I was saddened by the loss of the 8 lives. But I think that to go into any further conversation, particularly given the delicate state that we're in right now, where we all hope for the speedy release of the hostages, would be inappropriate.
Gentlemen, can I say a word for my law?
Sure, go ahead. Absolutely.
It seems to me that the War Powers Resolution is an adequate barrier, but it's not a complete preventative. Certainly not. The United States has interests in the Persian Gulf, which within the limits of prudence may only be defensible by some military means. There's no doubt about that. And the War Powers Resolution says only that if the president introduces troops into an area where there are hostilities or imminent danger of hostilities, as he may as commander-in-chief, he may not keep them there for longer than 60 days unless the Congress affirmatively gives him the power, in other words, declares war. Now, that means that the Congress shares the responsibility. That's a barrier to improvident war. That's the important part of it, and that's very practical. Secondly, I must say I'm appalled at the claim of a cool head. I'm the ranking member of this committee, and I've been advising on the Vietnam refugees for a long time. It seems to me that the claim of a cool head by a candidate who says he would have counseled bombing all these fellas in the Majlis over in Iran.
This is Alan Nicholson in New York City with Senator Javits. Senator Jacob Javits reacted sharply today to a claim that a cool head was required for the solution to the hostage question by his opponent in the race for the Senate during a debate in New York City today. Javits said remarks of Alphonse D'Amato quoted in the Watertown Times yesterday, where D'Amato advocated bombing Iran, did not show a cool head. The cut runs 34 seconds and begins on my count. 3, 2, 1.
I'll ask this of Ms. Holtzman, but I'd like everybody to answer it. We'll start with Ms. Holtzman. Are you concerned that we are now getting into a situation where we are, in effect, going to reward the Iranians for releasing the hostages that they took in the first place? And what's to stop other countries from doing this exact same thing to us and using it as leverage for something they want?
Well, of course, our actions can be susceptible to that interpretation. And, of course, having a cool head and being patient was susceptible to charges of weakness. But I think the president was correct in saying that our major objective should be the rescue of the hostages and to save their lives. I think it took courage, in fact, in view of the kinds of attacks that were made, to say that that has to be our top priority. I think it shows strength to keep your eye, for a nation like the United States, to keep its eye on the prime objective, which is saving their lives. I also think that there's another matter with respect to Iran that ought to be discussed, and that is one of the reasons this area is so important to us is because Our energy lifeline, in fact, our economic lifeline, is in the hands of the OPEC nations. Countries, as we can see, that are highly unstable, countries that are ruled by despotic leadership, countries that may have leadership that is relentlessly opposed to the United States and filled with hatred for the United States. I think we have to develop in a very serious way a policy of energy independence. We have got to develop a coherent and systematic program of energy conservation.
Yeah,
we haven't been
question.
Doing that.
We're talking about what's to stop other countries to not see this as a sign of strength by the United States, but to see it as a sign of weakness that we have capitulated to their demands when they have committed, as what Senator Javits called the other day, an outlaw act.
Well, of course they've committed an outlaw act, but you've got to get the hostages back, and I think that we will not have lost credibility in the eyes of the world. Our objective is to get our hostages back, but our objective, you ask what we can do in the future to prevent ourselves from being vulnerable. One of the things that will strengthen the image of the United States in the eyes of the world is to get ourselves independent from OPEC and not be in a position where we're as vulnerable. That's why we have to develop a decent mass transit system, which we don't have. That's why we have to begin to explore for alternative sources of energy in this country, and we're not doing that in an effective enough way.
The question on the table is, have we capitulated to the Iranians? Might other countries take example from this and take hostages from us? We'll have answers from Al D'Amato and Senator Javits after this pause when Newsmakers continues. Newsmakers and the three candidates for United States Senate, and to repeat his question for Senator Javits and Al D'Amato, Frank Lynn.
And we'll start with Mr. D'Amato. Are you concerned that we may be in the position, the United States may be in the position of rewarding the Iranians for what Senator Javits termed the outlaw act of taking our hostages, taking our diplomatic people as hostages? And how do we stop that from happening in the future with other countries who might want some kind of leverage on us?
I think the question of reward at this point in time is secondary. I think that all of the free world understands, allies, those who are not friendly towards us, that our prime consideration at this time is the release of the hostages. I think, though, that addressing your question in fullness is the fact that we must see to it that we're not perceived as weak, as indecisive, as not having the ability to mobilize our allies in terms of diplomatic and in terms of effective economic action, which we were less than successful in doing in this particular situation. I think that those are the kinds of things. And indeed, I would submit to you that this administration and the philosophies have brought about a situation whereby many of our traditional and strong allies no longer have confidence in our faith and our judgment. The fact that President Carter, whether rightfully or wrongfully, would adopt the policy, for example, to deploy the neutron bomb and thereafter go to Chancellor Schmidt and convey to him the urgency of this. And Schmidt takes great political risk and convinces his colleagues, his government, that great sacrifice to go along with the deployment, then after to have Carter drop that. Now, what that does is undermines the confidence that our allies have in our decision-making, in our role-making, and the fact that we are going to go forward and keep commitments. And it's that kind of vacillation that has helped create the moments of indecision. Whether or not the president was right or wrong in his initial assessment of the deployment of this weapon is secondary to the fact that you don't make these kinds of statements, create momentum in an area, and then retreat and undercut your allies. The same thing in Cuba when he decried.
What are you saying?
I say that that's essential to...
We are vulnerable to further acts, future acts of this
type? I believe unless we formulate with our allies a clear posture in terms of handling these kinds of situations and bring them in and are able to command their respect and their confidence in our leadership and in our abilities, that these kinds of things indeed can take place in the future and indeed will.
Senator Javits on the same question.
I don't think the Iranians can take any satisfaction and reward. Their country is now in the gravest danger. Many are being killed. Their oil province is about to be immobilized, if not captured. And the Russians are poised on their border and able to move into the country. And whether or not we can even defend the Persian Gulf is a big question. Without the rapid deployment force, which is not ready yet, even though we have very good naval forces in the area. So they're not getting any reward. They're being punished now. But the perception that they shouldn't grab our people depends upon world reaction, not only ours. And our allies have been gravely at fault and are gravely in disarray. And I regretfully must say that Ms. Holtzman's "we'll talk to them" isn't going to mean anything. We have got to have a tighter agreement with them. We do consult. It is not true that we don't consult about matters outside the NATO geographical periphery. We do. I have myself, as far as our country is concerned, and with full authority in terms of delegations to various conferences. But the important point is that they're not working with each other in harmony, and we have to have a much tighter alliance which commits us to work with each other. It is shameful, for example, that the embargo against Iran had lots of holes in it and still does. It is shameful, for example, that Western Europe still extends large money credits to the Soviet Union, notwithstanding Afghanistan, and does lots of business as usual. A real crackdown by the world would have a good chance to bring the Russians to heel. So my answer is the reward of the Iranians is destruction, chaos, and their country being torn apart and now war. And the perception is that the United States and its allies are not as effective as a single unit like the Soviet Union, which can act alone. And whatever it does, it does. And we've got to make it so, or else we're going to have lots of this kind of trouble. Now, you can't prevent international outlawry completely, any more than you can prevent crime completely. But you can certainly minimize it, and that's our job to do.
Let me turn to the political side of this hostage matter. There is a political aspect to it. I wonder if you all agree that if the hostages are released quite soon, that would be a boon for President Carter in his reelection.
Well, I think it would help President Carter in his reelection, but I believe it's too late to be decisive. And I believe that the possibilities which were inherent from the very beginning, and many people doubt that the president picked the right option in just waiting. You've got the Entebbe example and the Mogadishu example. Of course, there is the drawback, and it might have meant some lives among the hostages sacrificed. We must never forget that, and nobody can second-guess the president. We simply have to accept it. That was the action of the country. But I do believe that there are enough countervailing factors so the release of the hostages will not be decisive, though it will help.
Ms. Holtzman, what do you think, or do you think it will help President Carter, or do you think a cynical attitude might set in the question, why now? Why 1 week before the election?
Well, there may be some people who will be cynical, but I think President Carter seems to be ahead in the polls at this point. I think the hostage release would benefit him, but I don't think it will be necessarily decisive. I believe that when the voters come down to making a decision, they will support him, although there is much dissatisfaction. But I think the release of the hostages is very important, and even if it comes a week before the election, whenever it comes, it's highly desirable, and I hope all of them are released safely.
Mr. D'Amato, how do you feel? Will it benefit Mr. Carter? Will it be enough to swing this very close election?
A very close election might be decided as a result of the beneficial thrust, the happiness, the joy, the euphoria, in certain cases, of the public. We all want this. And consequently, the person who is in office, where there are good things taking place, there's a natural benefit. There may be some cynicism, but I think it would be a plus in an extremely tight election. It might provide the necessary momentum in one or two of the key states to swing the election one way or the other.
Let me ask all of you this, maybe starting with Mr. D'Amato now. What would be your specific first priority if you were elected to the Senate beyond celebrating the end of this marathon? Mr. D'Amato first.
Take a vacation with my wife and family. I think really looking to see that we can try to work towards bringing about a balance in terms of our economy, in terms of developing...
Try to be specific, though, more specific than that.
Well, we can't encourage $65 billion giveaway programs. We need a strong nation. We've got to redefine our priorities. We've got to get productivity back. We've got to bring about some tax laws that encourage private incentive, real job creation. I would not be for example, creating an $8 to $12 billion.
Yeah, but is there one, say, specific area you would like to target on, bills that you want to introduce?
Yes, I think it's so necessary for the salvation of this state economically, so that we can reverse the onerous confiscatory burden being placed on working middle-class taxpayers, to get a redefinition of our welfare system, to see to it that it seeks to get people into the mainstream rather than entrap them in a very costly system that comes down so hard on the business community and working people of the state.
So welfare would be an early...
Welfare would be your number one priority.
We've got to change that system if the people of this state are going to change, and in addition thereto, we can't just discount the priority that our military has been less than adequate. We need a well-balanced, both strategic and conventional, Army, Navy, Air Force, and we are sadly lacking.
Ms. Holtzman.
Well, I think there'll be a number of things I'll be working on. I think immediately after the election, if I should win it, I intend to go and thank the voters, as I have after every single election I've been involved in, and thank also the thousands of people who have volunteered in my campaign all over the state of New York. I'm very proud to have had their support. In Washington, I think some of the most important things that have to be addressed, and I don't think you can ever limit your activities to just one issue, is one, mass transit. I think in the metropolitan area of New York City, we have a mass transit system that's a disgrace. The commuter railroads are terrible, the Long Island Railroad, Conrail, and our New York City subways and buses. I think we need to have much more help from Washington, and I think this is a national issue, too, because we are vulnerable to OPEC because we do not have ways for people to get out of their cars and reduce their dependence on gas and oil. That's a major priority, and I want to fight on it. Number two, I think we also have to have a federal agreement to take over the costs of Medicaid and welfare. I'm very glad the Carter administration has agreed on the Medicaid costs. We're going to have to fight hard to make sure that that commitment is translated into reality, and I hope to be working side by side with Senator Moynihan, as the this will be the first time, if I'm elected, that we will have two Democratic senators from New York State being able to work together in the Senate in 33 years. I also want to deal with some very serious problems that really haven't quite been fully addressed in this race, and that is the problems of women. We have a very serious problem of poverty among elderly women. In fact, it was a staggering statistic in the papers recently that one out of every four women who's going to be working today will be poor when she gets to be a senior citizen. That's a very frightening statistic, and we've got to do something about making sure that Social Security benefits are fully paid to women as well as men. We've got to make sure that the marriage tax on couples where both husband and wives work is eliminated. We've got to make sure that women who work, instead of getting 59 cents for every dollar a man earns, gets equal pay for equal work.
With all due respect, rights. I don't think the These question envisioned going through your whole program. We wanted to get one or two.
But I was giving you an example. Priorities. I think we have to have an effort in that regard as well. Another area that I'm deeply concerned is the area of aging, and I've been working on that in the Congress. We have some very serious problems with health care and the like.
Let's go to Senator.
And keep in mind, Senator, that you've been there 24 years, too. So
it's a temptation hard to resist to go over your whole program, given a question like that. But I'll resist it. And my priority will be productivity and jobs. It takes a single remedy, in my judgment, or a group of remedies in order to do it. You've got to start, in my judgment, with the tax cut we've been talking about, which will stimulate productivity by enabling business to accelerate the depreciation of what it installs in equipment, structures, transport, etc. Secondly, you've got to give the individual a break so that he can save more. And we ought to raise that figure of tax exemption of interest from savings from $200 per person to $500 per person. And thirdly, we've got to do a very special job about jobs for young people, one-third of whom are unemployed today in the youth minority group, and in some cases, 50% and 60%. Now, all of these laws are capable of being put on the books immediately. They are ready, they're out of committee, and you can move on it even in the post-election session of Congress, which opens on November 12th. And it has a great, very great bearing on defense, and for this reason. The United States has not won its wars because, like the Soviet Union, it had masses of ships, masses of planes, masses of mobilized men. We've won our wars because we get the latest stuff and we can produce it then and there, and that's the most effective. Now, you need a remarkably good industrial base for that. Our industrial base is getting very obsolescent. Look at steel and look at autos. So that you need the laws which will straighten out that situation on the highest priority. That is and will be my first priority.
We are just beyond the halfway point in this marathon, and we will continue with the questions for Senator Javits, Congresswoman Holtzman, Presiding Town Supervisor Al D'Amato, of the vote, and especially considering your comments the other day that you're very frustrated at not being able to reach the voters, persuade them of your health. Do you think now is the time to acknowledge that if your public career is to continue, it is going to be in an appointive rather than elective capacity?
I don't think now is the time at all. I haven't fought this battle to call it now is the time. I fought this battle because the people have got in the Senate of the United States everything that my opponents say they ought to have. They have stature, they have prestige, they have power, they have places on committees, they have a fellow who delivers the goods, and it seems inconceivable to me that I cannot break through so far adequately. I've broken through a great deal. I'm not out of the contention at all to the electorate, and I believe I can. I believe by dint now in the third week of my really active campaigning that I can break through and convince the people of the state that they've got everything they want right here in me and that I can deliver, and that all the talk about my health and my infirmity and whatnot is so much nonsense. Here I am debating, campaigning, moving about as active as either of my opponents.
Yet that theme that you have pursued for over 2 weeks now has not caught on, as you have admitted. If it stays like this, can you rule out at this point that conceding before November 4th?
I certainly rule it out at this point. I rule out what you say. In other words, I'm not prepared to give up on my electorate. I said